Hello, hello, Lisa here. Since you're listening to this particular podcast, I imagine you're likely a leader in the area of talent, HR, people, culture, L&D, employee experience, or OD. Are you also a talent leader who is longing for a safe sounding board to bounce ideas off of? Who's thirsty for some fresh new ideas that will actually work? Who maybe needs to influence multiple stakeholders who don't always know what they want? Maybe you're somebody who wants to get out of their own way and who's ready for expert, ongoing, and confidential mentoring. If you answered yes to one or more of those statements, then we need to talk. In addition to my group programs, I work privately with a select few clients as their talent management thought partner. I will help you, over the next 90 days, finally create the space, the intention, and the strategy to implement an initiative that's critical to your team's longer-term impact and legacy. Let's chat and see if there's a fit. Book me online at greenappleconsulting.ca/contact. Welcome to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell. I'm a talent management thought partner and results coach, wife, and mom. Talent management leaders are hungry to learn from their peers and want to hear about real-life talent initiatives. This podcast is for and by talent management leaders. My guests and I dig into successes, challenges, and lessons learned from a very practical, not theoretical, point of view. You'll discover important insights about how to elevate your confidence and amplify your influence in a role known for being caught in the organizational middle. I'm thrilled to have you listening. So let's get going and hear the truth about talent management today. Do you see yourself as a multiplier? As a talent leader, you should. Consider the impact your work has on all of the people in your organization. It's why I produce this podcast week in and week out, to provide you with learning and inspiration so that you can be the best multiplier possible, lifting people up and helping them live into their potential. Today's guest gussies up the term a little and shares with us his view of all people in an organization being force multipliers, without whom major growth and achievements simply would not happen. My guest is Ken Finneran, who is VP of HR at eMed Digital Healthcare, which is a leading digital health tech company on a mission to democratize healthcare. He's also a proud father of two and a champion for the HR function. In this episode of Talent Management Truths, you'll discover a philosophy around how HR must deliver at the pace of business, an example of rapidly adjusting to big changes in your team size, and insights into the importance of people as a force multiplier in an organization that has experienced 500% growth. Enjoy. Hello and welcome back to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell, and today I'm joined by Ken Finneran. Ken is the Vice President of HR for eMed Digital Healthcare. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for having me here.
My absolute pleasure. So let's start off with hearing a little bit about your career journey.
So I've been leading the strategic global HR function since November of 2021 for eMed, which is a leading digital health company on a mission to democratize healthcare. And then prior to that, I served as VP of global HR at Kaseya and Chief Human Resources Officer at National Beverage Corp, which is a NASDAQ-listed company, driving both of those companies' hyper-growth phases as both organizations developed into multi-billion dollar enterprises by growing over 500% respectively during my tenure there.
Oh, is that all?
Prior to that, I had worked internationally as well as for a leading third-party logistics company in the supply chain area, all in senior HR roles.
Yeah, interesting. No, I was joking because you said 500% growth. I'm like, oh, is that, that's,
it, yeah. You know.
But just blinking, you got it. Okay, wonderful. So tell us a bit about what eMed does, because it's really fascinating kind of niche area. And I know it's quite a young startup company.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the opportunity. eMed may not yet be a household name for many of you. eMed is a technology-driven digital health company and the test-to-treat pioneer, which we like to say offers peace of mind to individuals through telehealth by helping them take control of their healthcare and wellness from the comfort and convenience of their homes. To do so, we've developed a growing collection of telehealth kits. During COVID, many of you likely used a telehealth kit that allow people to screen and then, if they test positive, receive telehealth visits and even RX treatment for common ailments from anywhere.
So RX being prescription for listeners. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So I'm in Canada. So lots of listeners are from Canada, but we have European and many US listeners too. So for US, I think they probably relate a little more to this, but it's fascinating because you talked about too, that don't you have partnerships as well with those telehealth companies. So it's quite interesting. Like there's the product and then there's the partnerships.
That's right. So we have the products themselves, which are the actual telehealth kits. Many of the partnerships are with our telehealth partners. And just recently, we made a major acquisition within what is now eMed UK. We have a major partnership with the National Health System and essentially can have on-demand doctor's visits available to all of our end patient customers, even internationally.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's so interesting. And just how telehealth and that whole concept has progressed, right? COVID really accelerated that. Like it's interesting. I think it was probably about 2021 and we were in Eastern Quebec with my in-laws and we had gone for a hike. Well, it was up on a mountain it was called Vélo Volant, but we were all in these bikes. So Vélo Volant means flying bike. So you're on these so-called bikes that are suspended from wires going through the treetops. You're actually pedaling and it's moving you along these cables. Fascinating. But anyways, my husband had sustained a dog bite just before and he thought it was nothing and shook it off initially. It was my mother-in-law's dog. We get up to the top of the mountain and it's looking nasty. It's looking infected. And so I remembered that CAA or AAA in the States, Automobile Association, mm-hmm. this new telehealth benefit when you're a member. And so I'm on this mountain with, kind of crappy service and somehow was able to log in and get an appointment for him right then and there so that we did our Vélo Volant and we came down the mountain and we went to the pharmacy and picked up his prescription for antibiotics. It was crazy.
I love that. And that's the new world we live in where both technology is able to accelerate a lot of the care that we receive. Yeah. And we've capitalized on that by having all FDA regulated diagnostic tools that are now able to be delivered, as is the care and the interpretation of those tests, all in an electronic method.
Yeah, it's just wild. I mean, who'd have thought, right? When we were coming
That's right.
up, like it was like, go to the doctor, wait in the waiting room. So beautiful. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that insight because it's a really interesting business and business model. So I'm sure listeners are intrigued. So let's discuss a bit around. So as a startup, many, many people can relate to having been in a startup per se, or in a culture that is quite startup-like. I've had that experience a couple of times myself. And when you and I first met and got acquainted, you were talking about this need as head of HR to be able to grow and deliver at the pace of the business. And that term, that quote, pace of the business, is so important in, helping HR and talent leaders be more effective. Could you tell us a little bit about what it means to you?
Absolutely. And thank you for the question, because it's something that I have actually over my desk for our HR team constantly to be able to think about, are we putting initiatives in place, technologies in place, tools in place that help us affect the business at the pace of business change? And that's one of the questions that we oftentimes ask, even of senior leaders, when we talk about things like learning and development. Are we learning as fast as our market is changing? Are we implementing products at the pace of the business, meaning the pace that the market would allow in order for us to grow effectively? So it drives business development. It drives team growth. It drives learning and development. It drives diversity and inclusion. What do our markets look like? And is our team reflective of that? And how are we approaching that from a DEI perspective to be engaged with the business? From a tactical perspective, there are also ways to do that. I think all of us as HR perspectives professionals are currently dealing in one way or another with either four or five generations in the workplace. And so when we look at that and say, what does the business require? Are we changing at the pace of the business? How are you integrating the newer generations into the business? Now, as a tech enterprise, our average age is much younger than in some of the manufacturing environments that I've worked in the past. And so it's more of a natural flow. And yet there are a number of ways to do that, such as partnering with universities, implementing internship, apprenticeship programs, reverse mentoring programs, where some of those younger generations are teaching some of our experienced leaders not only how to better utilize things like generative AI or social media, but also just to understand what are the expectations of the younger generation so that they, the more experienced leaders, don't automatically just assume they're this entitled generation, but really having that dialogue and helping gain a better understanding there.
Yeah, so interesting. Okay, so you covered a lot of ground here. So this, you know, are we learning as fast as the business is changing? How are we kind of adapting on the fly? So, and that you kind of moved into the generational piece. So I love this concept of reverse mentoring. Have you put that into place? Is that something that you've formalized in some way?
We have, and it's I'm going to say formal, but a more of an informal practice is probably a better way to term it. We encourage it, and many of our experienced leaders have taken us up on that and absolutely love that and have become our biggest champions for it. And yet it was a concept we floated and wanted to see, like many concepts here at EMED, we are very experimental, I guess is a way that I would call it, which as a startup, that is I would say, pretty normal. You tend to be very nimble, very agile, open to new ideas. And yet it's the reverse mentoring has really benefited both the younger generations from having more access to some of those senior leaders, but also giving them the ability to develop some of their skills and have that personal relationship while also teaching and raising the skill bar for some of our more senior executives as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes me think about, you know, my last company before I went on my own, it was in place when I got there and then we revamped it completely, but it was a more formalized mentoring program with a whole matching process. It was a year long. There were a lot of good things about it. And one of the things that I'm really proud of was how we really did training both for the mentors and the mentees. And for the mentors, that training included being open to what you'll learn from your mentee.
Oh, absolutely.
How can you draw from them and bring out their greatness to our benefit? So it wasn't just a one-way show. So I appreciate that term, that view of reverse mentoring. And I'm sure some listeners are nodding in agreement and are there. Others are thinking, oh, that's good. I got to bring that in here. So, all right. So another thing that I'd like to chat a bit about is you've had a really interesting experience, particularly recently, because you know, it's about two and a half years, I think you said you're there, 3 years or so. And you've moved from you had a team of two, scale up to four. This is just within HR, back down to two as, you know, market forces happen. And then this massive acquisition and all of a sudden you're up to 14 and it's a global team. Tell us a bit about what that's been like and how do you make it work? How do you kind of go with the flow of those massive scale changes?
I mentioned early on a little bit about the hyper growth companies I was a part of. And so I have had that experience of leading large global teams. But here at EMED, you're exactly right. We started with two, grew to four. And then like many companies in the fourth quarter of 2022 and first quarter of 2023, we were all analyzing as technology companies, what's the market? What are they going to do this year? What's it look like? And we needed to do our part. And so we cut back to two as well. realizing that there would be less hiring, at least initially in 2023. And so then to grow through acquisition and add another 12 individuals across talent acquisition, HR business partners, and payroll, employee relations, et cetera, gets you back to a large global team that is about a 1 to 100 HR support to employee base ratio. Now, there can be a lot of debate about what falls into HR and what is that right ratio. But I think when I look at what that's meant for us here, it's like the rest of the organization as well. We too are really in the midst of bringing the teams together, understanding the teams, understanding the capabilities, and then deciding what's the best way to structure this for the future. And those are the conversations we're having with each of the functional teams. So if you think about engineering, or you think about marketing, or you think about sales, what is the right size? What are the right capabilities of the new global team? Where can we drive synergies, the magic buzzword of M&A? And yet for HR, that's an important concept as well, because we had dual HR systems, we have dual ATSs, and a lot of these things are now, we're looking not just at the systems, but also at the people to say, how can we build on those skill sets? And that's an interesting piece, especially now where large corporations like the one that we acquired are oftentimes more product-centric, and I'll use the word siloed, whereas when, as a startup, as you know, you wear a million hats just that, by the very nature of being a startup. And so that opportunity to say, you may have been in talent acquisition, but to be a more well-rounded HR professional, the expectation is that you have the opportunity now to expand into employee relations or understand more about what it takes to be an HR business partner. And that helps us develop, of course, the succession plans, but also just the necessary capabilities should individuals be out of the office, as well as grow our skill set internally.
Yeah, it is interesting. So you've got quite the job ahead of you, I think, to try to just figure out, you know, especially with the dual systems and the opportunity for people to potentially move around a little bit and learn new skills and so on, just makes people stronger ultimately, right? There's a lot of opportunity there. All right. So let's move our focus a little bit to, you know, something else that you've done some really great work around, which is building out what you call a culture of building out rather culture and communication. So you've got quite a few communication tools up your sleeve that you actively use as an HR leader in the organization. Could you walk us through those?
Yeah. Coming to the organization that was still very much in the startup phase, had been operational for less than 9 months when I arrived here, I think the organization was still really trying to figure out who it was and who it wanted to be. And so one of the core elements that I partnered with the CEO on was, and together we, I'm going to call it jointly own culture, is having a true and finding true sounding boards and communication channels with our team members. And so one of the things we implemented was a monthly newsletter. This monthly newsletter is an e-newsletter which highlights the new individuals who have come. It highlights some of the sales that we've done. It highlights any news articles, things like that. But we also have a Slack channel that is tied to that newsletter, where every day we are active in communicating with the team. We also use polls on that Slack channel to get ideas and then to implement those. So in terms of learning opportunities, one of the things that our team members said they loved were TED Talks. And so we implemented something that we call TED Talk Thursdays within the company where any member of the team can come and share on a topic that he or she is passionate about and receive some feedback from the respective team. Again, this is setting aside 15 minutes of our team members' time, and usually we'll have anywhere from 20 to 50 people attend those, and they're just very engaging, as you can imagine. If we don't have someone from the outside, then we'll do one of the most popular TED Talks, and we'll just talk about that. But it's been really, really fun. We also have put into place, and for this one, I think there's probably a need for some background. Most companies have a one-size-fits-all approach to learning and development, and go take all of these courses around standard leadership practices, et cetera, or power skills, soft skills, however one refers to them. And yet what we said, we will leverage our eMed University for the basic learning paths around things like communication skills, presentation skills, teamwork, team building, all of those things. And yet, what's equally important and where we think the greatest value comes from is having monthly 30-minute real conversations with leaders and employees. How does this fit into eMed? How does this fit into our culture? So what does being an effective communicator mean at eMed? What does teamwork mean at eMed? And that's then for the employees. How can I be a better teammate? For leaders, how can I foster and build an effective team at eMed? That takes it away from just this general pie in the sky kind of theoretical conversation and learning element to a very pragmatic, what does that look like within our culture element? And based off of that, we continue to implement new ideas from our various team members.
Yes. So I love this example of peer learning. So this is something that listeners who've been with me since 2 years ago know that I'm a huge advocate. So I do a lot of team coaching, and my program, The Talent Trust, is all predicated around peer learning, right? So making meaning of concepts and figuring out, how does this apply to me and my reality at my company? And what do I want to do about that? Right? What's the opportunity? And is it for now or later? You know, that kind of thing. So it's not just, you know, putting in LinkedIn Learning, which I see a lot of people do, for instance, or they have Skillsoft or whatever it is through their online university. And then being dismayed when the utilization is low, right? So it's giving people a form to actually make sense of it. So I also worked with another company where we've done cafes, right? There's peer learning cafes that sign up based and so on. And again, it's to talk about certain modules, right? And make meaning of it and figure out, now, what do you want to do about it? Like what's the so what now that you've actually taken the learning? So it's very much about application.
I love that thought, the concept of the cafe, the learning cafe, especially in this new era where a generative AI tool can put together a learning path for an organization of all free and available YouTube videos, TED Talks, whatever that is, in less than a minute. It's then about having that conversation, making it real, getting pragmatic about it, that's really going to add that value.
Yeah, and the robots can't touch us there, right? Because ultimately,
that's right.
It's about how do we filter this through our own human experience, right? And understand, because it's nuanced, right?
Each
person's reality, each culture is so different and unique. So really, really great to hear about this particular model. I'm curious, so if people go through the modules and so on in the eMed University, is there any kind of, you know, tracking or accountability structure that helps encourage them to come and actually do that making meaning piece in the conversations, monthly conversations?
It's interesting you ask that, because one of the things that has been a big failure of many of the learning systems that are out there, as well as the performance management systems, is that they aren't linked. And so we actively put being a lifelong learner as one of the core elements that we are rating in our performance management cycle. And we hearken that back to, have you attended the trainings? And even if they haven't attended, all of them are recorded, so they can still listen to them and have a conversation with their manager about them. So we see who has either attended in person or online, who's had those conversations in regular feedback sessions with their manager, who has shown through their own dedication and attendance, not only attendance, but discussions and implementation, the application of what they have learned. And that then has an impact on the performance score that they are given in terms of their yearly performance and how they are getting better in delivering contribution, is the word we use, in value to the organization.
Yes, wonderful. I love the link, because I think, again, offering learning in a vacuum and then just expecting people there will be uptake doesn't make it happen. And it doesn't mean that it's having any kind of impact ultimately in performance, which is why we do it, right? So it's clear on how do we ensure there's some return on investment. And it's an imperfect science, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And I think there's something else too that is occurring to me here, is the need to be nimble and agile and to not get too locked into one way of doing it, that everything's got a shelf life. So we need to kind of, you know, it may work for a while that we have it sort of embedded in that way, the lifelong learner in the performance management system. And then after a while, we might need to come at it slightly differently. Who knows? Or change the language, or offer more communication around it, et cetera. Anyways, okay. Well, let's switch gears a little bit as we travel down the path. Because another piece that I know you're super passionate about, that I am as well, is what's had the biggest impact on your confidence as a talent leader?
Wow, that's such a deep question, simple yet very deep. And when I think back to the quarter century or more in HR, in those senior roles, I think the biggest thing for me as a talent leader is a certain recognition, and namely a recognition that we drive and deliver on the greatest force multiplier in any organization, the people and the talent. And this honestly gives me the most confidence. I think every organization, and I've been particularly close to that in the PE world, where they're constantly talking about multipliers and what they call force multipliers or value multipliers.
And so for listeners, PE is private equity.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. And so in the last three organizations I've been a part of, I mentioned earlier the 500% plus growth. And that is not solely dependent, of course, on talent initiatives. But I would submit it could not have been achieved without significant talent and people initiatives. Any organization, especially in the knowledge worker type of organization, ultimately comes down to its people. And so if you are growing in a hyper-growth environment, there needs to be a strategy around talent acquisition. How are we growing at the pace of the business, to come back to that? How are we developing our teams internally? That's not just the folks that we're bringing in now, but also the folks that have been with the business for a while, who probably were the right folks initially. But if you are a $100 million business and now are a $1 billion business valuation-wise, you're probably going to need different things from those individuals. How do you help them, guide them, develop them along with the business? So are they growing at the pace of the business? And then are you, and as an HR professional, able to support the actual sales efforts of the business, not only through finding the top sales talent, perhaps sales trainers, programs, monitoring development, monitoring performance, and setting compensation and reward systems that are adequate for what you're trying to achieve. But also, do you have opportunities to directly influence the growth of the business? And while not everyone does have that opportunity, certainly I've been blessed, I'll say, to have had the opportunity to have a direct impact on that, on our business and on our sales here at eMed due to the expansion into another business unit that targeted HR professionals as the primary target audience for that product.
Say a little bit more about that. So what did that look like?
So earlier this year, we launched an entirely new business unit within eMed that was called eMed Screen, which offers proctored virtual drug screening solutions. So we took the technology overlay that we had utilized for things like COVID testing, flu testing, strep throat, and others, and partnered that with an FDA-approved test. So rather than scheduling an appointment to go to another outside organization, scheduling it 3 days out,
in the waiting room,
sit in the waiting room, and then waiting for another week for the results to come back, this test will give you the results in 20 minutes from start to finish. It's a saliva-based test. And so it's all the things that we talk about as an organization around accessibility, affordability, convenience, all with a verified solution that will get you, in this case, hopefully hired quickly. So a lot of recruitment companies have come to us for this. A lot of companies themselves who are doing a lot of hiring come and say, we want to have these tests right in our recruiters' talent acquisition team so that as they're sitting with candidates, they can take them so we can hire quickly. Time is money. And so with that, the target audience for these solutions were CHROs, benefits, and HR service administrators of drug screening services. And so our internal HR team not only served as the business unit's first client, but also the primary source for insider information, if you will, about the frustrations of HR with the traditional drug screening process. That then in turn led to me inviting dozens of HR colleagues with whom I had developed a professional relationship over the decades to multiple networking and product showcase events, to be quite honest, which I then coordinated with the help of marketing, and then to actually sell or present the business case, the new solution to those customers, and of course, create sales and drive sales for the organization.
Yeah. So it's such an interesting example. I appreciate you pulling back the curtains for us on that and congratulations on your success with it, because it's more rare, right, than common. Certainly I have spoken, I run into so many people, right, through the podcast, through my clients.
Of course.
So I have met some HR leaders who have directly driven revenue in a similar way, but some of it's product dependent, like what is the what? But I encourage listeners like just to be listening to this and thinking about, how does our company perhaps serve, you know, a subset, a niche of other people like me, right? And how might I contribute? You know, it's not always going to be the case, but how might I contribute in terms of being the voice, being that trusted advocate who gets what these people we might be selling to go through, what they're up against. Like in this case, I need to have like a quick access way to do drug screening, right? So it's kind of interesting, right? Like how could you apply that here? You know, I think about an example where I didn't drive revenue. I would never go as far to say that. But when I was an HR business partner years ago, I supported sales. So I supported the executive of sales and his management team. And part of the way I supported them, so I couldn't drive the revenue. These were wholesalers selling mutual funds to financial advisors. What I did do was I went on the road with them frequently, with this wholesaler, that wholesaler, to develop relationships, to get a sense of performance, and also to understand their business and their challenges really well so that I could partner with them more effectively. And so that takes us back to, you know, was I responsible for sales? Indirectly, because I know it had an impact on performance, on how some of these folks were doing discovery and so on, and how they were building relationships with these advisors. And I like to think that I was a force multiplier through people in that case. You know, you were talking about that's a core part of what you do, right? The biggest force multiplier. And it's such an interesting concept. Yes, big in venture capitalist, private equity world. But, you know, that force multiplier, people are the most expensive resource in any company. Almost.
That's right.
We're going more digital in some cases, but right now that is typically the case. And so as HR and talent professionals, my God, we have such an opportunity and a responsibility to ensure that we're doing as much that as we can to help that force multiplier see its potential.
If I can just touch on one item you just mentioned that really resonated when you were talking about going out on the road with that team.
Yeah.
Because you spoke also about the digital age and how prevalent that is. It's an interesting dichotomy or contrast that we live in. We are in this digital age. We're living in the most connected era in the sense of the number of devices we have connected to routers and things like that, that the world's ever seen. And yet at the same time, we are the least connected individuals. At this time, there's an absolute pandemic, if you will, of loneliness, an epidemic of mental health issues.
Yes.
And our ability as HR professionals also here through low-tech solutions, meaning that conversation with our colleagues to ask the question and then actively listen and hear, ask the question of, how are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you concerned about? How is it going? And then to really listen and then to apply solutions is the most valuable thing we can likely be doing these days as HR professionals. So while all the talk is about systems and integration and generative AI and things like that, sometimes when we peel the onion back to what's adding the most value, it gets to the heart of human resources, which is the human component in developing those human connections. So I love the example you shared because that really gets to the heart of those human connections.
And what we do, and this is what, you know, the robots will never be able to do is that human connection, right? That cannot be replaced, that sense of empathy, that ability to acknowledge and really see people and show them that they've been seen and heard. So yeah, I think it's interesting that you and I could talk for hours on this particular point. I appreciate that you kind of pulled out. Yes, there's the high tech stuff and that's all great. We want to be at the forefront of it, certainly, and leverage it to the degree that we can in our own realities. And let's not forget about the low tech stuff that makes us stand out, that really matters and will always matter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we've come to the end of our time together. Ken, this has been really illuminating. You've shared so much interesting information here and from your world, and I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Lisa, and thank you to all of your listeners as well for this opportunity to share a bit with you.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your colleagues. Better yet, head over to iTunes and let us know. When you subscribe and leave me a 5-star review, not only do I glow from within, but more people will learn about the show and why they should listen. Until next time, keep telling the talent management truth.